The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. This year, 2024, is an election year in America, a presidential election year. And so we will be doing two podcasts a week rather than our usual one, because we want to and because we know you can't get enough Americano in your life. I am delighted to be joined today by The Spectator's most regular podcast contributor, Jacob Halbrun. He is the editor of The National Interest, of course, and he's in Italy on business. And he is the author of a new book called America Last, The Right's Century-Long Romance with Foreign Dictators. Jacob, congratulations on the book. I wanted to start by asking about the Middle East, because there's a lot of concern among sort of security people about what Iran might do in the coming days in retaliation to Israel's missile strike in Syria that killed several Iranian military commanders. And it's put a bit of pressure on the Biden administration, because they were hoping this week might be the week that Netanyahu and Biden had their come to Jesus moment, as Biden put it, and that possibly a ceasefire might be put in place in return for possible normalization of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia, which is now one of the Biden administration's objectives. Is the Biden strategy in the Middle East working?
The Biden administration did not have a strategy other than to muddle through. What they're hoping is that they can grasp victory from the jaws of defeat. The Middle East isn't a headache for Joe Biden. It could be an electoral landmine. He's being dogged by protests from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, particularly in Michigan, which he must win to be able to defeat Donald Trump in 2024. So Biden has come under severe criticism for essentially giving Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a blank check. He is now not trying to reverse course, but at least modify it. And the grand bargain that he is seeking would be to have Israel move ahead on a two-state solution, to involve the Arab states in the Gaza Strip, and to facilitate mutual recognition between Saudi Arabia and Israel. And all of this is well and skillfully outlined by Anshul Pfeffer in a new piece in The Spectator.
Yes, it's a very interesting piece, and I recommend all Americano listeners read it. But it occurred to me that the two-state solution is not something that anybody in Israel thinks is a serious option anymore. And then quite a lot of, you know, Palestinian Authority people think it's off the cards too. So has it just become a pipe dream that world leaders talk about and no one actually thinks will happen?
Well, I thought it was until actually the October 7th attacks, because they have upended the Middle East. And it depends which way you want to go. Now, there are members of Netanyahu's coalition, far-right members, who simply want to expel the Palestinians from the Gaza Strip and take it over, send them packing to Egypt, for example. Mm. The other issue is, if you don't think that's realistic, which it would amount to ethnic cleansing and would turn Israel truly into an international pariah were it to embark upon that course, the other question mark is the current situation really viable? Because as harshly as Israel proceeds against Hamas, it's going to be next to impossible to eradicate it. So you have to change the conditions in the Gaza Strip itself. You need some kind of Arab policing authority in that strip, which Egypt and Saudi Arabia obviously are not eager to take on. However, if you can strike a grand bargain like the Biden administration is envisioning, all of these things would become possible. The thing is, in the Middle East, none of this has ever occurred. There's good reason for skepticism, because as has been said, the Palestinians never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity.
Vis-a-vis Iran, we're in a similar moment to where we were in 2020 after the Trump administration took out Soleimani. And there was this very tense wait for the Iranian response. Of course, that was would have been a response to America rather than a response to Israel. But a lot of people say that Iran has become much bolder in the last few years with its proxies because it feels empowered by its relationship with China and Russia. Do you think the Biden administration has been less effective at containing Iran than the Trump administration was? I mean, it seems to be indisputable.
No, I don't see it as a question of containment. I think that the Israelis themselves got too lax about it. And what happened was that, like Trump, the Biden administration wanted to extricate itself from the Middle East. And, you know, taking out one commander the way Trump did was a symbolic gesture, but I don't think it had a material effect. The real problem is that Iran has expanded its presence in Syria and also in Lebanon. It has, in effect, been encircling Israel with proxy forces. These forces have become more skillful and more numerous. The Israeli strike in Syria was a lethal blow to the Iranians and a humiliating one. Now, the question is Netanyahu trying to bait Iran into a full-scale war in which the U.S. would then feel obligated to take sides? That's one question. That would be a disaster for President Biden because you're looking at sort of a World War III scenario where outside powers get enlisted and the price of oil could skyrocket to several hundred dollars a barrel. That would be deliver a body blow to Biden. So I think, look, he's trying to turn what is a disastrous situation right now into a grand diplomatic victory.
Well, it's interesting you say that because it does seem extraordinary timing from Israel, given the situation it's in, to conduct this strike in Syria now. And if you think that he's trying to bait an Iranian response, that would mean he's inviting a massive attack on Israel in order to elicit, to win back sympathy among other world leaders? Would that be is that what you're suggesting?
No, I don't think it's sympathy. I think Netanyahu is obviously in a very precarious position politically in Israel. He doesn't want to face elections. He doesn't want to face criminal trial. He has been phenomenal at clinging to power in the past. He continues to avoid a public accounting for the security and intelligence lapses that took place in October. So, and he's long lusted for a major attack on Iran, which is Israel's intelligence chiefs have not been as bullish about. But, you know, this would be a flight forward, expanding the war. It would probably drag Lebanon into the war. I mean, it would be potentially an all-out warfare in the Middle East.
And America always gets sucked back into the Middle East, no matter what.
Well, because, I mean, even if we are producing enough oil ourselves to be independent of imports or self-sufficient, the rest of the world is not. Mm-hmm. And it would be utter chaos in the Middle East if such a war were to break out, unless you assume that Israel could deliver a quick and decisive blow to Iran. Let's not forget that the Iranian regime is pretty unstable. They just faced another internal terrorist attack. There is mounting dissatisfaction inside the Iranian population with the reign of the mullahs. Gas prices are way up in Iran. So the country is not in great shape. I actually think Iran is in a weak position.
Well, if the Iranian regime were to collapse, it would make a lot of Western headaches go away. But I think people have been hoping for that to happen for quite a long time.
Well, ever since 1979, it's been one problem after another with Iran. It is the locus of much terrorism around the world. It's an ideological and religious regime that conceives of itself at war with the West. And that is why it is now building factories in Russia to construct drones to attack Ukraine. It is, in my view, a criminal regime and an ally of Russia.
But the Biden administration's sort of took on the Trump policy of pursuing the Abraham Accords, normalization between Israel and the Gulf states, at the same time as, while it didn't try and bring back the Iran nuclear deal, it certainly sort of made warmer noises about Iran and is less committed than Trump was to isolating Iran. Is that not right?
I don't actually think they changed much. The Iranians were recalcitrant about reaching a deal. And I don't think the original deal was so bad. I mean, I don't think Trump should have left it myself. The Iranians were abiding by it. They are now closer to building a nuclear weapon than they were before Trump tore up the deal. So I'm not particularly exercised about the deal. What I am concerned about is Iranian efforts to use its proxies to conduct warfare against American interests and against Israel in the Middle East.
Well, foreign policy plays a curious role in American elections. It seems to me this year that it's going to be more prominent than it was in 2020. Obviously, 2020 was sort of slightly washed out by COVID. COVID obscured all other issues. But how important do you think foreign policy will be for Joe Biden's re-election effort, particularly given he is getting quite a lot of heat from his left about the situation in Gaza, because the worldwide left is very, very angry about it?
It depends. He needs the Gaza war to wind down. I mean, Trump is correct when he says the Israelis need to get it over with. Netanyahu, there's increasing suspicion inside Israel that he's trying to prolong the war for political reasons. The Israelis need to be able to declare some kind of victory. They are losing support abroad. They are losing the support of Joe Biden. Biden has been unequivocal in his support for Israel, but he's getting hammered politically, and it's simply unsustainable. An American president can only go against the will of the voters so long. And if you look at the polls, it's not confined to Democrats. Republicans also do not support the way that Israel has been conducting this war and want it over with. So Netanyahu may not like it, but he's not going to be able to destroy Joe Biden's presidency. The Israelis remain dependent on American military supplies. This war would grind to a halt within 2 days if America were to stop sending weaponry and supplies to Israel.
And there is some criticism of Biden because he's now kind of grandstanding a little bit about Israel, making statements of condemnation, and so are people within his administration, at the same time as he's signing off massive arms deals to them. So there's an obvious hypocrisy there.
There is. He's going to have to address it. This cannot go on. He could lose Michigan if he does not begin to change course. He has already created serious headaches for himself. And it is interesting that Donald Trump, when interviewed the other day, twice refused to say that he stands 100% behind Israel. He just said they need to get it over with. Trump, in fact, outflanked Biden in his criticism of Israel.
And you mentioned Michigan because of the large Arab Muslim population in Michigan.
Correct. They are outraged. They don't even want to meet with Joe Biden. He tried to schedule a dinner with Arab leaders, and they had to cancel the dinner. They refused to attend dinner with him while there is starvation in the Gaza Strip. This is a PR nightmare for Joe Biden. Could undo his presidency unless he resolves it.
However, I think I might know what you're about to say. On other fronts, Joe Biden's re-election effort is having a better time than it has so far this year, anyway.
Things are going swimmingly on the domestic front. Today's job report was a massive 303,000 increase last month. A new Franklin Marshall College poll in Pennsylvania has Biden up 10 points in Pennsylvania, which is a swing state. Biden's overall numbers appear to be very slightly improving by about 1% in popularity over Donald Trump. So he is on the comeback trail. I remain confident that barring a lurch into a geopolitical catastrophe in the Middle East, Joe Biden will be reelected in 2024, particularly as I think Trump is sabotaging his own election campaign with some of his extreme rhetoric.
Which rhetoric are you talking about?
Referring to illegal immigrants, or if you want to use a politically correct term, migrants coming into the United States, referring to them again just the other day as not being humans. He said they are, quote, animals, referring to his political opponents as vermin. And calling himself, you know, saying he's going to run as a dictator day one. None of this is calculated to appeal to swing voters. You also have a recent decision by the Florida Supreme Court, essentially banning abortions completely in the state. And that issue will be on the ballot in 2024. It will drive Democratic turnout in Florida. So there are lots of potential difficulties for Donald Trump as well as for Joe Biden in 2024.
I could see why calling people animals is outrageous, but on the dictator thing, I mean, that has been very misused, I'd say, that quote, because he said, I'll be a dictator on day one and I'll drill, and he meant he's just going to sign lots of executive orders. It wasn't a real statement of I'm going to be a dictator, was it?
I don't buy it. I actually think he would. I mean, why give it up after day one? It would certainly be a quite pleasant sensation to have. And he was quoted the other day on a hot mic as saying that he wants people around him to behave like they do around Kim Jong-un. I want them to sit straight up when I talk. I don't think he's actually joking. I think he's quite serious. And I do take Trump seriously.
Do you find it odd that the Democrats are putting abortion at the heart of their campaign? I mean, not so long ago, Democrats would say they want abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. Joe Biden would sort of flip and flop on the issue of abortion. And now he, as a practicing Catholic, is campaigning not just that abortion should be legal, but that it's a moral good. And it seems to me that the issue is, well, certainly the Democrats can prove that it's been effective for them, because ever since Dobbs came in and reversed Roe v. Wade, their special elections, they've been hugely successful with abortion as an issue. But it's quite grubby, cynical politics, is it not?
Biden, I'm not sure he'd call it a moral good. He remains more diffident and queasy about the issue than many Democratic strategists would like. But from below Biden, Kamala Harris, governors, senators, they have all been pounding this issue. And yes, it has, so to speak, been a killer issue for the Democrats. They have battened at the polls repeatedly. And in a recent election in Alabama, again, in a swing district, I think the Democrat won by 25 points, and that candidate went on hard on the abortion issue. Also, there's going to be the issue of birth control, because that's an in vitro fertilization. Some members of the Trump camp, there was one on Twitter today, you know, are going around denouncing the idea of birth control, saying that condoms should be illegal as well.
And that would put them outside of mainstream opinion. But what, I mean, I wonder whether the Democrats are betting too much on abortion as a winning issue for them, because they've never had it in a general election yet since Dobbs. It's been special elections, so you can get the highly, and midterms, so you tend to get more highly mobilized voters there, so the pro-abortion groups will come out in great numbers. But independents do not feel as strongly about abortion as the progressives do.
No, but if you can, you know, scare them on the IVF question, and I think it could be quite effective. I don't think it'll be the only issue, but it can be an effective one. And the Republicans themselves have acknowledged that they don't have a good answer to these questions. And I doubt that they will in the coming election. In a sense, the Supreme Court handed them something of a poison chalice. I mean, it was more effective to be able to promise to abolish abortion than to actually do it.
Well, I mentioned this on the last podcast, but I remember Ron DeSantis, towards as his campaign sort of flamed out, he kept going around saying, you know, once Trump's got the nomination sealed up, you're going to see the polls change, as though the polls were kind of rigged to make Trump win the nomination, and then they would be rigged the other way to ensure that Biden wins. That's probably being too conspiratorial, but I mean, it seems to have played out that way, hasn't it?
No, I mean, because it's very hard to assess the reliability of these polls. Maybe they are reliable. A number of them have Trump slightly ahead right now in critical swing states. So I don't think that anyone is trying to really massage the polls. The question is, how well are the pollsters able to assess the mood and sentiments of the population? Who's going to turn out to vote in November, and who's going to be better at getting out early voting? So I have kind of given up on the polls, to be honest.
Well, swing state polling, you did mention that one in Pennsylvania, which is a very significant jump for Biden. But
if it's true, I mean, it's not that I'm doubting the veracity of the pollsters. It's just, maybe it is a 10-point jump. I don't know. I mean, none of this seems to make much sense at this point.
Yes. And the averages are now, I mean, Trump is still ahead, according to the averages, in most of the swing states, I believe I'm right in saying.
Right. The other question being, as the voters see more of Donald Trump, will they change their minds, or is it all baked in? Would the results of the election, if it were conducted today, be the same as they will be in November? Maybe all of this advertising and campaigning is totally meaningless. Maybe people have already made up their minds for the most part.
And as people have made this point quite a lot on the Americano podcast, that we have election seasons now in America, not days.
It's quite incredible. The amount of money, the intensity of the campaign, and the duration. I prefer the European model, frankly.
Mm. Well, on that cheerful note, you're in Italy, and I hope you have a lovely time. Thanks very much, Jacob, and congratulations on your new book, America Last.
Thank you, Freddie.
That's all for this episode of the Americano podcast. I'd like to thank my brilliant producer, Natasha Ferrose, and urge you to leave a generous, kind, and warm-hearted review of this podcast on whichever platform you listen to it.